You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on this week's RedCafe.net podcast, we look back at the Champions League defeat against Barcelona at Wembley and ask where did it all go wrong for United. We also speculate as to the ins and outs at Old Trafford and ask where the team needs to be improved if we're going to challenge Barcelona in the future.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 84 of the redcafe.net podcast, the last but one show of the season. I'm joined by Dan and Dov, as is always the case. Guys, you doing okay this week, aside from the obvious disappointment of the Champions League final defeat?
Yeah, very well, Steve. I'm genuinely, I think I texted you after the game on Saturday saying I wasn't actually that... Well, I was disappointed, of course, you know. We don't know, obviously, your team losing in a league Champions League final, but I thought that Barcelona deserved it on the night, and you can't really say much more than that, you know, in terms of the performance. And then on Sunday, I went to League One playoff, Huddersfield versus Peterborough. Yeah, Huddersfield lost that game as well, so it weren't a great weekend results-wise, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You mean you weren't wanting Darren Ferguson's team to win?
I was going to say, closet Huddersfield
fan. Not closet, no. Well, I went with a guy who's a Huddersfield Town fan, and they had, I think they had about 33,000 people there. And the attendance was only 48, so obviously the main share was Huddersfield fans, and it was a good atmosphere. And yeah, I was looking forward to Huddersfield winning, but I'm not too bothered about Darren Ferguson, you know. He's only the son of the great one, so... I couldn't really... to be honest, I wasn't really bothered who won, but, you know, I was in the Huddersfield end, so I thought it was more appropriate that they won.
You went to the parade as well, Dan?
I certainly did, yeah. I've got an absolutely fantastic video. It's about 6 minutes long, but it won't upload anywhere. It says it's too big.
Because it's massive.
Well, you say that, but it shouldn't take 24 hours for it to upload to the internet, surely.
Yeah, because it's massive. Because I looked at it, it's like...
Well, all the women tell me that, Dov, but, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's the way it goes. No, it's a great video. I mean, I couldn't have got in a better spot, really. We decided to go down to Old Trafford to watch it because I'd heard that they were going to stop outside Old Trafford to do like a speech or whatever. I got there about 2 hours beforehand. It was absolutely hammering down with rain, but everyone was in good spirits, you know, even considering we'd lost the game on Saturday. And yeah, the bus came around the corner, stopped outside the Holy Trinity statue, and I was literally on the front row, and like I could see Giggs, Rooney, they're all there. You know, it's brilliant. Everyone was hanging off the bus. Yeah, Bebe was on the front. Ferdinand had a scarf round his head. It was fantastic. It was Bobby Charlton was there as well on the bus. It was unbelievable.
Was he bouncing, Dan?
It was literally bouncing. And then obviously the atmosphere with all the fans there that started chanting and whatnot. And then Rooney lifted the Premier League trophy up. I've got that all on video. It's amazing. And then Rooney gets the microphone off everyone and starts chanting United songs. It was a really good day. The best day of my life, I think, really. It was really good. I was that close to, like... I had a jester hat on. I was going to throw it on the bus, but I thought...
I've seen that on the Facebook group. It's highly amusing.
That's it. I mean, I've got that jester hat, and I'm on Michael Owen's Twitter photo as well. But unfortunately, my face isn't on. You can see my hat on my arm. But because I'm holding the camera up, my arm's blocking my face. I'm gutted. But, yeah, I was on that. I was outside Old Trafford. It was great. Great news. Great game.
How are you doing this week, Doc?
Yeah, not bad. Obviously, my Monday morning wasn't quite as exciting as Dan's. I've got to say, I was quite disappointed at the end of the game on Saturday, to be honest. So I drowned my sorrows by drinking the official Champions League beer as well. Thought that'd make it better. But Dan's photos cheered me up on Monday when he put that up. That was good. And I like how you see every week you do something else on Twitter. So first you get an account, and now you're getting in with Michael Owen. I mean, Jesus Christ, Dan, you're a fast mover.
I am, yeah. Well, I've not personally tweeted him. I was going to congratulate him on his contract, but I thought that's a bit... He don't really know me, does he?
We'll start, guys, obviously, by looking back at the 3-1 defeat to Barcelona on Saturday. I sense there could be some contrasting opinions here, but... No, Dan, you alluded to the fact that, well, you've just held your hands up and congratulated Barcelona on their success, really.
Yeah, on the podcast on last week, I said I was, you know, fairly confident. Maybe not, you know, I was confident, but you obviously, you have, in the back of your mind, you think, you know, Barcelona could do us, and that's what turned out to be. You know, I thought that the first half was a bit weird, really, because again, like Rome in 09, you know, we came out for the first 15, 20 minutes, I thought we were on top, and you know, if we'd have scored a goal in that first 20 minutes, I think it would have changed the game completely. And then, for some reason, I don't know why, you know, for some reason we just seemed to, from going from a team that was pressing high up the pitch, not letting Barcelona have time on the ball, making them, you know, Dani Alves made about three mistakes in the first 10 minutes, just kicking the ball out of play. And they didn't like the pressure, and then, for some reason, we just seemed to drop off a little bit. And then, obviously, Barcelona got the foot on the ball more, and once they got into the rhythm, it was hard to get it off them, and the first goal, really, just lack of concentration. We mentioned in the podcast last week, you know, concentration is the issue against Barcelona. Don't switch off. And unfortunately, I think Evra switched off in the first goal. You know, he's obviously worried about Messi coming inside, but he's got to watch for Pedro there. I mean, he's inside the box and he's one on one with Van der Sar. You know, 9 times out of 10, Pedro will finish that, and it's, what you know, it's 1-0. And it was just disappointing the way that we conceded the goals, because, I mean, I know that the first one, it's a good finish, and the second one, you know, I think Van der Sar possibly could have saved that, but even before that, nobody closed Messi down, you know, best player in the world, and nobody runs out to him. And the third goal, we had chances to clear that ball and didn't. And then, you know, Villa, who's had an awful two, three months, just takes one touch and just puts it in the top corner. And I think that goal killed it. Then we're never going to come back from that.
You mentioned the fast start as well. I think it was an even better start, to be honest, than in Rome. And I just get the feeling that everyone sort of was really surprised at how poorly sort of Barcelona started, whether that was because we were pressing so well. And I just got the feeling that spectators, players, managers, everyone was just waiting for Barcelona to sort of get going. And eventually they obviously did. But I think we contribute to that. As you say, we seem to back off a bit, and then We sort of let them dictate stuff in the midfield as the half wore on. But, Dov, obviously you mentioned you were bitterly disappointed at the end. Are you saying you felt we could have done more to win the game?
I think that, basically this is what Dan said there, is the first 20 minutes, we were by far the better. We looked like Barcelona. I mean, we were the ones that were making them make mistakes. I mean, I've never seen Barcelona make that many mistakes in such a short period of time. And then why we just decided to stop just baffles me, and for me as well. All the goals were mistakes, the things that could have been stopped. Obviously, Dan alluded to Evra, but I also think Vidic as well for Pedro's goal. Kind of just seemed like he wasn't aware Pedro was there, and kind of moved away from Pedro and then tried to get back. And you think, surely if you're one of the best central defenders in the world, you need to be aware of what's around you. And I don't think he was. And the space that we gave them in midfield was ridiculous. I thought Carrick, right, for he had a decent game, but I think he was trying to do too much, or he was asked to do too much. He was asked to be the guy who gets the ball off the centre-backs and starts attacks. He was asked to be the guy who's shielding the central defence, and he's asked to be the guy who's closing down the spare man as well. And we've mentioned previously, he's a good player, but he can't do everything. He needs one job. I thought Rooney could have done a wee bit more as well. I thought his job was to come back and support Carrick and Giggs in the middle, and I thought he did it for the first 15-20 minutes and then didn't. And I think maybe Fergie was giving him a bit of a telling off. I don't know if you've seen that, where he was like, I'm the boss, you do what I say.
But to be fair, I mean, I saw that, Dov, and I was thinking myself, you know, Rooney was getting frustrated because he wasn't getting the ball in the first 20 minutes or whatever, and then obviously Barcelona would just start running us in midfield, and Rooney was like dropping a bit deeper. And Fergie's right, Rooney needs to stay just, you know, where he was told to play. But at the same time, if you're a player and you see that your team's getting overrun in midfield, you're going to want to help, aren't you? Especially someone like Rooney, who likes to chip in and does his work rate. It was funny seeing them both on the touchline, though, but Fergie was just saying, listen, don't mess about, you do what I say. And it's a gamble you take, you know. If we'd have played Rooney a bit deeper, even more so, you know, more like centre midfield, Hernandez wouldn't have even, I mean, he didn't get a kick anyway, but he wouldn't have even been, you know, Hernandez was virtually redundant all that game. The one thing that disappoints me is the fact that we had Mascherano playing centre-half. Puyol wasn't even starting, and we didn't test Mascherano once. I mean, when we scored the goal, Mascherano got sucked over towards Piqué, didn't he? And he left a big gap, and we didn't do it enough, getting in around him enough. you know, that's got to be a big regret for Ferguson, because I know strikers rely on service, but the way Hernandez didn't get any service was appalling, really. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't literally do anything with the ball. He never got it.
Yeah, I think like his role was to be the guy with the defenders, but like you say, if he's not getting any service from the midfield, then he is essentially redundant. No, I think so. I would say you can't really blame him too much for that, because it's not his fault.
No, I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming the fact that we didn't get the ball to him. I mean, the amount of times towards the end of the first half, we were just getting the ball at the back and booting it in the corners. I mean, I know I mentioned it in the podcast, right, to put it in the corners, but I didn't mean it like that. I mean, like, you know, it's got to be an educated pass. And, you know, Valencia, I mentioned on the Facebook thread, you know, he looked like a pub player. And he kept giving fouls away. I'm surprised he stayed on the pitch, actually. He must have given about three or four, you know, bad fouls away. And it's the whole team after that first 20 minutes didn't seem to click apart from the goal.
Yeah, his performance was the real sort of big surprise for me. I would have thought he'd have really put in a shift. And, well, I can't really say he didn't put in a shift, I suppose, but it just wasn't happening for him.
You got the sense, Steve, though, that he was asked, when Barcelona got the ball, to tuck inside to a more central position. And then the problem was then, obviously, when we got the ball back, there was nobody out wide.
Yeah.
So when we're looking for an out ball, it wasn't there, and the ball was just getting played over the top, and Abidal was just eating it up. You know, the fact that, and it sounds harsh, you know, but Abidal's, he's obviously not had the best last few months or whatever, and we didn't even test him. You know, he's literally come into a Champions League final and he's literally walked it, and, you know, nobody went up against him and ran him and tried to get crosses in, which was a shame for me. And, you know, Nani came on and you know, he might have been a bit naive, really. Messi skinned him on the left-hand side, and then obviously he missed his clearance, and then, you know, Villa scores, and it's game over. I just think all the players, maybe apart from, I actually thought Vidic and Ferdinand coped quite well, and I thought Fabio was quite good, actually. One of our
best. He was one impressed really me the most.
Yeah, yeah. Fabio was good. And the rest, you know, Rooney, to be fair, you know, he played well, as well as he could do. I just thought Giggs got a bit overrun a little bit, and Carrick, like you said, Dov, I think he was asked too many things, really.
Well, we had a big debate last week about who would play central, and obviously Giggs and Carrick. I mean, hindsight's a great thing. Would you maybe have gone with someone a bit more combative that maybe would have put the foot in a bit more, an Anderson or a Fletcher? Or, I mean, for the first goal, Xavi, Giggs just sort of let him go, didn't he? He thought, I'm not catching him here, and just let him go. And then obviously the goal came about because of it, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was a good pass by Xavi, but like you say, you know, no one closing down, no one engaged him, and it's like, engaged, what am I talking about here? You know, and nobody got close to him, and it's like, that's the disappointing thing. Like Dov said, you know, the goals that we let in were just, you know, they were mistakes on our part. It wasn't like they forced the issue a lot at that point either. You know, they were knocking on the door, but they weren't looking as if they'd score every time they went forward in the first, you know, 25 minutes, and all of a sudden they get one shot, one goal, bang. Mentally, then, everyone in the bar I was watching was just like, oh, it's going to be very, very hard now. And obviously the players must think that as well.
I just think as well, playing two in midfield, when you've got probably one of the best kind of centre midfield partnerships in Iniesta and Xavi, playing two there, and then you've got Busquets as well, it's suicide, essentially. I thought that was, obviously, like you say, Steve, hindsight and all that, but I thought it was, you really need three there, or at least two guys sitting in front of the defence, To eat up that space. But we gave them too much space, and it's not like they're bad players. They're not Peterborough or Huddersfield. They're Barcelona. They're a good team. If they get that amount of space, they will punish you, and they did. But no, we should have done a lot better. And I think Fergie saying he had a plan. I mean, the plan looked very, very similar to a plan he had a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but it's very hard. I mean, Barcelona haven't changed that much in personnel-wise, have they? But I think they've come on as a team. I think they're a better team than what they were in 2009. But, like, you know, we were arguing the other week saying that we're an actual better unit than what we were in 2009. So it shaped up to be a good game, and it was a decent game. But I just think that, you know, just that midfield area, and I don't know if we had a player, you know, like Hargreaves at fully fit or like Fletcher, it would have made much difference, but... You've got to be inclined to think it would. You know, we've got a 37-year-old midfielder playing in there who's obviously he's not as energetic as what he used to be. And Carrick, who's not really known for buzzing around the pitch, is he? He's more of a, you know, he's more of a quiet player, gets on the ball, passes it around. But, you know, maybe, I don't know, I'm not Ferguson. I'm sure he'll come back with a plan to beat them, and I don't think he'll rest until he has beaten them.
I was going to say, do you think he learned anything new from that Barcelona team? Or if it, say, he was having to replay the game tomorrow, think he'd change anything drastically after seeing what happened?
I don't know, really. He seems like he's a very stubborn kind of guy. You know, he'd probably go in with the same team and look to beat him. But I think that our mistake was, you know, we tried to play them in an open game, and I think that that's what ruined us, really, because I think if you play against Barcelona like that, you're going to struggle to, you know, to win the game. You might stay in it for a long period, but I don't think you'll go on and win it, because they use the ball so well. And it's difficult for a team like United, who generally in the Premier League have a lot of the ball, don't they? You know, and then to come up in a final against a team that predominantly has the ball, you know, you're not used to defending as much as what you would be in that game, and I think that's what caught us out, really.
And one Dimitar Berbatov, I don't know if you've seen the quotes, he said he was embarrassed at being left out. I think we were all a tad surprised that he wasn't even in the squad. But yeah, he was left out completely. He's come out the last couple of days and said that he wants to stay and fight for his place. A lot of players have said that and jumped at the opportunity to go if it's come about. So do you see him staying next season, or do you think he would go if a decent offer came in?
I think it'll not be if he'll go. I think it'll be more pushed out. I think Fergie's kind of, I've said it many times, Fergie doesn't trust him in the big games, and the fact that he's not getting even on the bench in a Champions League final, for me, says quite a lot. And I think he's on the market, and if they get an offer in, he'll be pushed out. But I was also reading as well, Steve, on your esteemed employer's website, saying that he's maybe going to just run out his contract and leave on a free, because I think at Christmas, the article I read on Goal said that he was offered a 2-year deal around about Christmas, but then a couple of weeks later they decided, no, we're only going to give you a 1-year rolling deal. And he obviously is trying to call the bluff of United, saying, well, fine, I'll just walk away in a year for no money. So
wouldn't surprise you, would it?
Dimitar, really would. Berbatov, you know, I'm not going into this again. I've been doing it the last two seasons. I mean, I think he's a good player. Of course he's going to be upset. You know, he's top goal scorer at United. He's left out of the Champions League final. But in all honesty, he's not really done much in the Champions League, has he? And I said in the pod, I'm sure I said it, I might have said it off air, I don't know. But, you know, I think if we had a chance of a 2-1 down in the last minute, I'd rather it fall to Michael Owen than to Berbatov, you know, as a natural finisher. I would much rather see that, and I think that's what Fergie was thinking.
So you're happy then with that new 1-year deal for Mr. Owen?
Yeah, certainly. I think he's a cracking player. I mean, I know that his game's changed over the years, and, you know, when you go to the matches as well, you can see that, like, when he doesn't play on the shoulder anymore, you know, rarely. He comes in and links up play. He rarely gives the ball away. He's always consistent. He has a good work ethic, and he seems to have a good attitude off the pitch as well. You know, he's obviously, he probably wants to play more games, but at the same time, I think he realises that the club that he's at, he's got chances to win trophies, and as he said on Twitter, Dov, you know, he said that, you know, he's playing with good players and he's got a great manager and he plays in front of good fans every week, so why would he want to leave? You know, he could quite easily go to a team, you know, like Fulham or Everton or something like that and play maybe 25-30 games, but he said he wasn't happy with doing that at Newcastle, and it's a fair comment. Who are we to judge? You know, I'm sure I'd probably stay at United rather than play for Fulham.
Okay.
I don't know if you're good enough for Fulham, Dan.
Chelsea were interested, I'm sure they were. You know, I'm trying to get a bidding war going.
Yeah, well, like, it depends who's after Darren Gibson's signature, because you could obviously say to that club, I'm better than Darren Gibson, so you should give me a contract instead.
I could do it. Look, you compare him to Darren Gibson, right?
No, you compared yourself to Darren Gibson a couple of weeks ago, actually. You said you were better than Darren Gibson.
No, I didn't say that. I said with the right training and obviously education, I think I've got a more natural ability. Steve will tell you, I can spray a pass around.
I'm not quite at the level of Darren Gibson.
Oh, do you not put me in a midfield at Old Trafford and see what happens?
If you're listening, Sir Alex, get him involved pre-season. Take him to America. Anyway, Paul Scholes, guys, obviously he's announced his retirement with immediate effect. Bit of a shame, really, that he wasn't playing his last game in a winning performance. But what a remarkable career. I can't really say, but there's so much you could say about it. What would be your favourite sort of Scholes goal or favourite Scholes moment?
I don't know, there's so many. Paul Scholes, it'd be weird supporting United not seeing Paul Scholes in the lineup. And the same when Giggs retires as well, it'd be odd, really, because it's all I've really ever known. I don't know, there's so many good memories. We've mentioned it on the Facebook thread, you know, the goal against Barcelona in 08 in the semi-final was a fantastic strike, and obviously helped us win the trophy that year. And then you've got other goals, like the one against Middlesbrough where the ball's just laid off edge of the area and just pings it top corner. You know, there's no movement on the ball whatsoever, just straight as an arrow. And then, of course, you've got the goal against Villa. You know, the volley from, 25 yards out that crashes in off of the other side of the bar, and you just think, he's an unbelievable player. Unbelievable.
goalie. Yeah, I was as well. I remember that one some time ago. Remember that strike?
Was that the one that was straight from the corner? Or he came from the corner and he...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the corner came in and then it must have got, I think, got headed away to the edge of the area and just booted it. The technique was unbelievable. He knew exactly what he was doing. You know, his back straight. It's unbelievable. It's a great strike.
And interesting strike. Comments from...
And then as well, sorry, Steve, what about the goal against Bradford from the Beckham corner? There's so many good goals that you could pick out. It's unbelievable.
And, guys, I don't know if you saw the interview with Guardiola when he was talking about his goals. He sort of suggested that there was a player that could step into that Barcelona team at the moment, that midfield alongside Xavi and Iniesta. Scholes would be the one, and I think you can. Well, that's obvious to see, really, and fitting tribute as well. It'd be a shame to see him go, but like I say, it was something that we knew had to happen one day, and unfortunately, it's been this season. Okay, well, moving on, just got an email from Ed Gillat regarding the final. Really not happy with the performances of Evra and Carrick. He says it was bad management from Ferguson, and he thought Scholes should have been brought on at half time. He felt Nani should have been brought on a lot earlier, and he thinks that we're going to need someone like Schneider if we're going to move up to the next level, really. And he suggests that we're going to struggle with the team we've got at the moment to beat Barcelona in the Champions League again unless they were sort of knocked out before the final. So thoughts on those comments?
The Nani one, maybe, because I think, like as we touched on before, I thought Valencia was pretty poor first half and Nani might have done something a bit different. But, you know, saying that, like you said, hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, Valencia could have turned the game in the second half for all we knew at half time. The Scholes thing, no, I don't agree with that. I think there's obviously sentimental the reason why he brought Scholes on with 20 minutes left. We weren't going to win the game by then, and I don't think he'd have necessarily made the difference early on the second half either, because, as we outlined before, you know, the fact that the midfield got overrun, Scholes wouldn't have helped that in any shape or form. You know, we needed the ball back to get it to Scholes, so I don't think there'd been much point of that. So yeah, I disagree really. I think the everything, you know, he's had a disappointing season by his own standards, but I think he'll be back again next year and he'll cement his place again as one of the best backs in the world. So it's just unfortunate that they come up against a good team, and you know, it's the way it is sometimes.
What Eddie says about Wesley Snyder, probably true. I think we need a bit more quality in the centre of midfield, and Snyder's a guy who can win the ball back. He's quite busy as well, but then he's got that bit extra when going forward, and he can pick a pass out. And I think if we are going to move up to the next level, you need the best players in the world in the position, and he is one of those guys. So yeah, I would say definitely a signing we should make if we can.
I was going to say, although, with you being in Italy, I mean, do you ever get a sense of what the Inter fans are thinking? I mean, do they think there's a possibility he could go to United? I mean, what's the feeling in Italy?
It was kind of died down about a wee bit, Steve, in the last sort of month or so. I mean, it was about 2 months ago, there was a lot of talk about him going, and the fee was going to be around 40 million euros and stuff like that. But the last sort of month, it's not really been talked about, to be honest. And he said himself that he wants to stay at Inter. But I think, to be honest, I think if we make an offer, 35 million euros, probably get accepted, and I think he would come as well. If it gets accepted by Inter, he'll kind of see that as a sign, right, okay, they want rid of me, or that'll help the club in the long run, something like that. But there's not really a, he's definitely going to go, feeling it's more if there's a big enough offer made, then take it sort of thing. But if I was Sir Alex Ferguson, it's an offer I would make.
I'd agree.
Do you really think Schneider will make that much of a difference, though?
Yes. Schneider's a fantastic player. Schneider's a player we don't have.
Well, obviously,
right. No, I don't mean he is an actual player. He's the type of player we don't have.
Right. I don't know though. I've not seen. I generally not seen like much of him apart from, you know, at the World Cup and when he used to play for Ajax. Because why didn't we buy him when he was at Ajax?
He's developed since then. He's got better since then. He went to obviously Real Madrid, didn't he? And didn't quite go to plan there. But from what I saw of him at Real Madrid, when he did get the chance, he never really let anyone down. And then obviously he's been brilliant at Inter, and I don't know if you've seen much of him playing for Holland as well. He's scored some cracking goals for them. He created a lot as well. And I just think he would be the sort of missing part of the puzzle, really.
Where would you play him, though? Because we'd have to...
You'd play him just behind either the front two.
The front one or front two, you see, because then if you know, Rooney's been playing behind the front player, hasn't he, this season, so where would you play Rooney?
Well, there'd be less of a onus on sort of Hernandez having to play as many games, I suppose, and whether you can rotate Rooney and Hernandez, I don't know. Can you play with both of them and Schneider in behind? I mean, these are questions.
That's it, you see. You, You're not going to be able to say to Wayne Rooney, look, you're not playing this week because we're playing Snyder instead. And then Hernandez will say, well, I was high goal scorer last year.
Yeah, from what I've seen of him, though, he does seem to have the sort of discipline that he can sort of work back. So if he was having to play in a midfield pairing where he's needing to not only stay forward but help out defensively as well, I don't see
why. Genuine question, is he like much better than Van der Vaart? Because from Van der Vaart,
yes,
he's a good player, but is he?
No, he's much better than Van der Vaart, Dan. He is world, genuinely world-class, best in his position in the world for me. You won't find anybody better than him. And I think seeing where's he going to play, I think, well, it doesn't matter where he plays as long as he plays. In essence, and Steve's right as well, he can play a bit further back. He can play sort of centre midfield as well if needs be. Obviously, he works best operating in the space between sort of halfway line and the box, but he's very much capable of playing in the middle as well. So,
but even if we play 4-4-2 though?
Even if we play 4-4-2. He's done it a few times for Inter as well, played in a midfield too when needs be. Obviously, he doesn't do it every week because they play with the number 10, but he can and has done it.
I think Goff's right as well with saying if the two clubs can agree a fee, I don't think there's anything going to stop him moving because he's won everything in Italy, isn't he? Effectively, he's won a lot with Inter. So obviously, AC Milan improving as well, Goff. They're going to be tough to sort of beat next season in terms of the league. And yeah, I just don't see what would get him to stay. There's no Mourinho there anymore, and you'd think he had a decent sort of bond with him. So I think he's ready for his next chapter in his career, and hopefully we can get something sorted. But we're saying all this, it'll probably end up, it just gets killed in the water sort of thing, and nothing happens in the end.
So what do you think about Modric then? Because that's been doing the runs, hasn't there? The rumour about Modric coming.
Yeah.
I like Modric, he's a good player, he can get the ball, he can run with it, he can tackle, he can... You know, he's strong on the ball and he's creative as well. I don't know whether he'd be an option instead of Snyder, or would they get both? I don't know.
I don't think they'd be able to afford both, to be honest. Yeah. But yeah, I'd agree that Modric, if it had to be like one of Snyder or Modric, I would go Snyder. But if I could add Modric as well, then yeah, I'd have no complaints if he joined in the summer. Quality player.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
So then, guys, just looking ahead to next season then, I mean, where do you think we can improve? Obviously, we're talking about Schneider and Modric potentially coming in there. Do you think there's any other positions we could look to strengthen that would help us maybe take that next step to be able to beat Barcelona if we're to meet them again next season? And how do you see next season going in terms of who might buy in the summer and where we could strengthen as well?
It was actually, Steve, there's one rumour I could have heard, I was quite surprised actually, or it's maybe not a rumour, looks like it's going to happen, is it Ashley Young coming? Which, like, I know we're saying how we're going to beat Barcelona, how we're going to improve for next season. Do you really think Ashley Young is going to improve us, or like both these? What do you think? Ashley Young is a Man United player, it doesn't sit right with me at all.
I think that Ashley Young's he's a good player, isn't he? But I mean, the thing that annoys me about Ashley Young possibly signing, you know, the fact that every time I've seen him for England, he's never really done much. I mean, I think he scored against Switzerland or somebody last year, but I don't think he's really come on. And I know he's only 25 and he's got a long way to go, but you know, in terms of making that step up, I don't think he's a big enough, you know, high profile signing. On the other hand, though, we said that about Valencia. You know, Valencia's come in and done very well lately. The only other thing as well, Young appears, if he goes to sign, he'd be like, you know, like you said, 14, 15 million, which for a 25-year-old English player who's an international isn't a bad deal. So there's pros and cons to it. And I think, you know, in the Premier League, I think he'll add something. But I think in the Champions League, obviously, he's never really played in the Champions League, has he? So it'll be quite important to see how he does. But yeah, like you say, I've heard that it's a done deal. They're just waiting to announce it. But I don't know. I don't know.
With the cash side of things, if we can get him for a bit less, maybe a 10, 15 million, then I don't see why not. But as well, is he going to be happy sort of rotating quite a lot? Because in Nani and Valencia are on form, I think, and Park as well, can't forget Park, you've got three wingers there that, well, they're going to be difficult to sort of keep out of the team. So he's going to have to play well if he's going to sort of kick on. And obviously, I haven't even said the likes of Obertan, and is Bebe going to kick on as well in pre-season as well? There's still a few he'd have to displace if he was going to get regular football. But then I think it'd be a useful addition for the right money.
And what about as well then, obviously you said it'd be good for right money, I think we need another defensive midfielder. Obviously, with Hargreaves leaving the club, I can't see anybody. Like you say, Fletcher's maybe the closest to what Hargreaves was, but I think Fletcher maybe plays a bit more advanced. I think we need somebody who's quite happy to sort of break up play, and to be fair, we need somebody who's a bit better than Darren Fletcher, to be honest. But yeah, if we're going to compete in the Champions League, as much as it, I'm not going to go on an anti-Darren Fletcher rant again, but he's been really poor this season, and I think the season before last he was quite poor as well, so I would say that's another area we need to improve on if we're going to win or win the Champions League back.
Who would be available though on the market at the moment in that sort of area, that position?
That's a tough question, Steve. I can't think of anybody. That's why I asked you to.
Bernard Diarra, I'm sure we've mentioned him in sort of a water carrier, if you like.
The thing is, when you get a player like that, though, when they win the ball back, they've got to be able to pass it as well. I think Diarra can do. I mean, we saw him at the Bernabeu, didn't we, Steve? And he was fantastic, really, a good player. You know, he played well. He's a good player. But there must be a reason why Arsenal let him go and Chelsea let him go.
And Portsmouth as well, mind. Portsmouth, they were quick to take money for him.
I think they'd have taken any money for him.
What about Paul Pogba then, coming through? He's that sort of player, is he not?
I would say so. I still think a bit young to become a first-team regular yet, Steve. I mean, maybe in the future. But I think if we are going to sort of like everybody's talking about like Ferdinand and Fergie, that we'll be back next year. I think if we're going to win the Champions League or make another stab at it, I don't think Paul Pogba's the man that's got to get us to that. But I think maybe in the future, from his potential and what he's done in the academy side.
Okay, and what about some of our rivals then, guys, next season? Personally, I think, well, it looks like it's going to be one of the toughest Premier League title challenges yet, to be honest. I mean, you've got the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, obviously City now with their spending power. Spurs, if they make a couple of signings, will still be a force. Liverpool, got to say they're on the up since Dalglish came in. So could be an interesting summer, not just for us, but elsewhere as well.
It will be. I mean, like, as you mentioned, I was at the pub the other day with a City fan, actually, of mine, and he was saying how he thinks it'll be tight, and there's going to be at least six or seven teams fighting for them four places. You know, it's not out of the question that United get in the foot, you know, top four with the way that things could turn out. I'm not saying that's not going to happen. I'm just, you know, just putting it out there. You know, you've obviously got us, you've got Chelsea, you've got Arsenal, Liverpool, City, Spurs even. Everton, if they buy well in the summer, could potentially, you know, get into the top five. Teams like Aston Villa as well, you know, they've lost the manager today, and then obviously there's rumours about Mark Hughes going there. They could well get in. It's going to be really competitive, and I'm looking forward to it already. I hate it when football's not on in the summer.
Yeah. You should watch cricket, Dan.
Cricket's rubbish. I don't know. I can watch the World Cup games and things like that, you know, jump on the old bandwagon and stuff. But when you watch a game that lasts 5 days and you can still draw, don't understand. A waste of 5 days of your life.
I hope there's no cricket fans listening, but yeah. I'll let the summer as well, Steve.
I'm quite happy for him to comment on that, because I think it was. I don't understand it. I know it's all tactical, but I don't understand that. How you, if you've got a target to hit, then how you can't hit meet by one run if you try. People try for draws. I don't understand. I don't get it.
Just in terms of, we're talking about rival signings who they could potentially buy. Do you think there's going to be more? Well, potentially there's going to be more than one club going for the same player in England this summer. I mean, someone like Schneider, I'm sure City wouldn't mind throwing money at him and trying to bring him in as well. So there could potentially be three or four clubs going for the same player this summer. That's what makes it even more interesting.
No, I think so. I think also what you should remember as well is the last summer, or the summer transfer window before the financial fair play rules come in. So obviously next summer you're going to have all the rules about clubs can only spend what they bring in and stuff like that. So you're going to see clubs that are like sort of City and Chelsea, who are sort of run by sugar daddies essentially, just spending as much money as they can so that they can get all these players in now, because they probably won't be able to do it next summer. So I think obviously this probably won't happen because I'm going to say it, but we might have one of the best summer transfer windows for a long time. Obviously, every season it's going to be a great summer, all these deals and stuff, and nothing much happens. So I think with all the new rules coming in next year, you'll see a lot of clubs just spend the money because they won't get the chance to next year.
Yeah, it's a good point, but I think that we need to sign two or three decent players, I think, that, you know, proper players, and I'm looking forward to it. I do like the transfer window, it's good, it's fun.
What about players leaving? Like, obviously, We thought Michael might go. Like, he's obviously signed an extension. Looks like Park's going to sign an extension as well. You said something quite controversial, Dan, before we started recording. So what do you think about our left-back options?
I mentioned before, I think he's had a poor season by his standards, but you know he's excused by the fact that he obviously had the rigmarole of the World Cup beforehand and then everything else. And we've got Fabio coming through, who looks like a cracking player. I've said before, you know, John O'Shea can play left back. So we've got two there. And it wouldn't surprise me if somebody came in for Evra, you know, at a decent price, that Fergie let him go. But I don't think that will. I was just speculating. You know, I don't think that will happen. He's got potential there to become the best left back in the world, I think. And I think he needs a rest from football. And I think that's going to get over the summer. And I think, you know, by the time August comes around, he'll be up and at him and ready to go.
Okay, then, guys. Well, before we close for this week, got Cabbage and Player of the Week, of course. Dov, who'd be your Player of the Week from the Champions League final?
I'm going to give it to Fabio. I thought Fabio did really, really well coming in to what is a game, obviously, under the spotlight of the world. And played, I thought, really, really well and had a good clearance off the line. And I thought it was maybe a bit shaky for the first few times he was sort of tested, but after that I was very, very impressed with him. And if he steers clear of injury, then Patrice Evra might have to get sold, because Fabio will be taking that left back spot off him.
Stuff, Dan?
I'm gonna have to agree with Dov. I think Fabio was our best player on the night.
Stuff, Cabbage, Dan, start with you this time.
I don't really, there's quite a few I could go through, but I think the fact that I'm gonna give it Jason Park. I thought he was poor on Saturday, to be honest with you. Didn't really do his job that he was asked to do. Although saying that, Dani Alves didn't really get much joy running down the left hand, their right hand side. But I just think that he could have had a bit more influence on the game.
So
I'm going to give it to Dimitar Berbatov for being the top scorer in the Premier. Exactly, he didn't play. That's how he's getting cabbage. Top scorer in the Premier League and can't even get on the bench in the Champions League. So yeah, he's getting cabbage for me.
Completely forgot about my option for a player in a week. My player, I'm going to give it to Rooney for scoring a goal, and I thought he generally looked quite a threat whenever he was on the ball. And Cabbage, I'm going to give it to Giggs, I think. I don't think he played very well. And like I said earlier on with the Xavi goal, the Xavi pass to the Pedro goal, I felt we could have got a lot closer to him and sort of not allowed him to basically run at the back four. That's my reason behind that one. Well, that just about brings an end now to episode 84 of the RedCafe.net podcast. We'll be back again next week to do a rundown of the season, pick out some of the high points and low points of campaign. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net with any questions, comments, suggestions, anything you like before the final show of the season. That just leaves us to say thanks once again for listening, and we'll be back again next week.